Hiya, it's Wildcards. I'm Amelia Bonner, and you've got Siobhan Began, you've got Dan Morgan, you've got Neil Atkinson, and you've got camera off for because he's a man of mystery and he's trying to hide his transformation. It's Mike Kearney. Mike
Is
just
it
come in
though?
the
Is
gym.
it Mike?
Is it Mike? We don't know.
Can't confirm it as Mike Kearney.
That's it. I there's rumours it's Craig Hannon doing a voice.
I'm not sure.
So Mike, you've been doing like a kind of a Rocky-esque montage in your home gym over the last few weeks. So I reckon the reason this camera's off is because you're waiting until we come out of lockdown to show us this transformation.
I mean, who can say? It might be. It's got a big part of it. Also, a big part of it is the fact that I'm only on my phone at the moment, and for as close as I'd have to get to see any of your faces, it would be the same.
Which So you're a few weeks into your training regime now. Which member of the Anfield rap do you think you could most easily throw over your head?
Oh,
Craig Cannon. It's the same thing.
Probably, yeah. Probably would be Craig, to be honest.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know.
Over your head.
Do you know what? I'm not sure. I'll wait and answer that question when we get out. Something to look forward to, isn't it,
at the pub?
Yeah, something to look forward to. Wouldn't want to be last in that queue because I'd be dropping someone by then. Like.
So should we dive into LFC current? Because there is still LFC current. There are still new things to talk about. And your choices are season tickets, which had 23%, fullback alternatives, 25%. But your winner was the leaked kit on 51%. So this is the news that I only saw minutes before this, because I'm clearly so far out of the loop, that a kind of a suspected, alleged, reported, I don't know, a maybe kit from Nike has been leaked. Are these things often right? I don't know. It's a sporty red, as you'd expect, but with teal accents that are, I'm going to say, controversial. Seen some mixed feelings about it online. So, Neil, you'd only just seen it as well. What do you think?
I'm all right with teal. The more I look at it, the more I'm all right with it. I like the broad redness of the Enterprise. I think it's a good red, and that's always my first question. I think with all kits, until you see them on footballers, so if this is indeed the kit, and we've got no idea of knowing if it is or not, but if it is the kit, until you see them on footballers, you're never quite sure. So I think that's worth remembering. And normally it would be around now that this would begin to sort of leak out. So I'm good with the teal, to be honest with you. The collar I need to see, to be honest with you. Yeah, it's a little bit of a granddad collar, a little bit of a, it's a little, you know, it's got a few Liverpool reference points. It's a bit 88, 89, 89, 90, the collar with the little crossover there. I'm not against it again, but I sort of need to see that on a footballer. Ultimately, it's always a conversation about the quality of the redness this. And I think that's why, you know, as I say, when you see the photos, there's been kits in the past that I've looked at and liked, and then seen them in the flesh and gone, oh, I'm not sure, you know. And then the other thing can happen where at first you can have a view and then you can see the kit and you see it on a hanger or you see it on a football player for the first time and you think, yeah, that's a really good deep red. So it's about the depth of the red. If the red is sufficiently deep, I will be in favour. And hopefully there'll be interesting things going on with the shorts.
Panto Neil there with his thoughts on the colour red. Dan, what do you reckon? I mean, it is. I'm not sold on the teal. It's bold. It's something we've not seen before, and I'm not entirely convinced.
I have this thing where I never judge a kit until I see its socks. So that
Solid.
Sounds a bit mad, doesn't it?
No.
But honestly, I think the socks is where you can get a bit creative with the design. I think with most kits, the shorts and shirts have to follow a certain pattern, but the socks is where you can start jazzing it up. Like that 13-14 kit, the Mad Third kit, where they had like one sock purple and one white. Glorious. Whoever thought of that, you know, deserved a pay rise at Warrior before it went bust. So, firstly, I have that. The only disappointment I've got with it is that I like the current setup of everything that is sponsor, badge, brand, etc. I like that to be in yellow. So I'm a big fan of the yellow, not the white. And similarly with away kits, I'm a big fan of red and yellow, the opposite way. So yeah, the teal, don't mind. Don't know where they've got it from. Don't know where they've got the idea from. It's a bit basic for me.
It is a bit basic, isn't it? I was coming here for outrage, I'm not going to lie. All I've got are two reasonable men.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm sure we've had teal in the past. I don't think teal's not new.
No.
My other thing as well is that the other thing I'll say is that I'm kind of holding out for the training gear because that's where I'm expecting it to be a bit special.
Yeah.
So I can
socks
take,
and training.
Socks and training. That's where I'm not committing to anything based on a shirt alone. I want to see socks and I want to see training ranges and then come and talk to me.
Thank you. I mean, it's very much the premise of what we're doing here.
Of course. I didn't mean that as in, like, I'm not speaking to you about
it. And I'm done. We were out for a walk the other day and we went past three different adult fellas in the training kit. And, like, I kind of get it because the training kits are the coolest bits that you can buy for sure. And they look really, like, slick and they're very smart. But there's just a part of you whenever you see an adult man fully dressed in training kit that goes... they're not going to ring you. You're not going to have to play. Like, there's just something about seeing a man in the full training kit. He looks like he's ready to get on the pitch at any point. Like, he thinks if he has the luck, he'll get to do it. And I don't know. Maybe that's what you can do when you've got this kit. Siobhan, what do you think of them?
I can't believe I'm agreeing with two of the wildest things I've ever heard on this, but I'm in with the it all depends on the red, and I'm in it with the socks as well, because it's all about the top and tail, isn't it? It completes the outfit. It's like a girl like picking the shoes to go with the outfit, isn't it? You know, it's no different. So I'm with that. I've got a small bugbear with it, which is going to sound dead petty. And I've just re-looked at it to make sure that it was real and I'm not just inventing this in my head. It's got obviously the two stripes, the white and the teal. The inner stripe is white and the outer stripe is teal on the collar. But the inner stripe is teal and the outer stripe is white on the arms. So they're not inner and outer, they're up and down.
Yeah.
So with that annoys me a little bit. It's like something I'm not going to be able to forget. The thing about these kits when they come out at this stage is they always look really like sprayed on, don't they? And really like ergonomic. Like Neil said, they look completely different when they're on an actual man. Men aren't shaped that shape, so yeah, it's hard to judge because they look like they're built for fashion at this stage. So I'm not outraged with it. I think the teal is a bit of a nod to other things. It's not like brand new, is it? But I'm not loving it. It looks a bit like an international kit. Is it Portugal's kit that's got the green on the outside?
Yeah.
It just looks a bit... But Nike, I think a lot of people have spotted that they've done that. Like, they follow quite similar patterns in things they do. So, yeah, I'm uninspired.
The collar's nicer than the teeny tiny button that we had a few seasons ago. I was not a fan of the teeny tiny button.
Served no purpose whatsoever. Just think it was someone's job to figure out how to get that button on that shirt.
Right, this season... buttons. That was a big meeting. I mean, the chances are, Mike, we have no idea when we're going to get to see them wear this, so it kind of feels like we're having a big hypothetical conversation about an outfit we're going to wear for a night out that we may never get to go on. But with that context, what do you reckon?
You know what? I've not bothered looking. I don't really bother looking at the leaks and that, because generally there's something... I don't know how accurate they are. Sometimes they can be right, I suppose, but I'm a bit like everyone, wait and see it in the flesh just wait and see Alison Becker striding. I know he's not going to be wearing the red, but just wait and see Virgil van Dijk strutting around in it, and I reckon you'll all like it. I reckon you can wear a bin bag and everyone be gone.
I was about to say, honestly, yeah. Alison can wear what the fuck he wants, Mike, can't he? Let's be honest.
That black
goalie. But it's just a black goalie kit, but there's something because it's on him.
Oh, no.
Yeah, like Mignolet wouldn't wear it as well, would he? Come on.
The most exciting thing for me about it is it's hinting on a green away kit, you know, and I'm banging into a green away shirt. When was the last time you had one?
Teal.
No, but not teal. Let's have green. I've not seen it, and even if I did, I'd be arguing with you over shades of green and teal. there'll be someone out there reckoning it looks a bit blue, and that's going to be mad, isn't it?
That man is Kev Walsh. I'm going to think it's outrageous.
I'll probably hold off judgment. The training gear, I haven't bought a Liverpool shirt. I think the last Liverpool shirt I had was a Morientes 19 shirt from when I was about 13.
I was about to say, one of the things about this is that you are asking, we are the wrong people. The key age demographic for this as to whether or not they think it's good, I would say, goes from 7 to 22.
Yeah.
That if they like it,
a bit high.
Absolutely great. I'm just trying to allow there a little bit, Siobhan, you know what I mean? I don't want to make people old before the time. 7 to 22. If it gets love from the 7 to 22 age bracket, then I'm absolutely fine with it. They're the key people in this conversation.
I got skitted for wearing one on an Anfield Rap podcast last week, age 26. Mm-hmm. So that does go to show that's officially over the age limit, not allowed.
Dana, you were passing off as gym kit.
It is gym kit. It's air fit. Whatever.
Let's not go there again, Amelia. Just recover.
They're not going to ring you, Amelia.
Yeah, they're not going to ring you.
Just going around the park, trying to make eye contact with anyone that I feel like might be my mate.
Always wants going. Oh, she's wearing that for the lads.
Yeah, always. Just so the boys will pay attention to me. Dan, out of interest, what are your thoughts on this season's socks? Because I think I spent the first three games of the season trying to work out what was going on with them.
Yeah, I did. You know, I thought they had white socks pulled over. Because a lot of players do that. They have like compression socks that go just over the ankle. So I thought it was a bit of that going on. Yeah, I'm into it. Obviously, the greatest socks ever have an Adidas three-stripe on them, and we're not going to get them. So, but you know, I'd have been all for bringing back the Stan Collymore cricket collar kit with the Adidas three-stripe at the top of the socks.
For me, the greatest socks will always be the purple away kit where the socks were odd. That's the one.
Yeah.
That's the one.
Absolutely.
Like, wild.
That's leaked, passed, and otherwise dealt with there in terms of kits. Your options for LFC pass were El Hadji Diouf, Mario Balotelli, steaming ahead. Well, not steaming ahead. He's got 35%. It's a respectable lead. And Fabio Barini. So we're going to talk about Mario Balotelli. And I can't make eye contact with anyone anymore. I can't see if anyone's got immediate burning thoughts about Mario Balotelli that they want to tell me. But, Neil, you seem quite excited that you'd won. So why don't you talk to me a little bit about him?
Balotelli was, the whole story's absolutely bananas. Everything about him, it is crazy. The way in which he was bought at the last possible minute. The way in which he ultimately managed to simultaneously look like a footballer and look like someone who had absolutely no business playing football for Liverpool at once was quite the trick. His touch was often there, and I remember being in some grounds at times feeling as though he's just run the game for 10 minutes. And then what he did for the other 80, I had no sense of what he was about at all. And it's something that goes almost beyond mercurial, because it wasn't as though the high points were ever particularly high in there either. So the whole thing's really rather strange. And I don't really feel as though it's ever been properly explained. Like, I feel as though everybody involved, including players, have all signed non-disclosure agreements, because no one's ever really gone into a lot of detail, and there's rumours about conduct and all of this sort of stuff that I'm always a bit suspicious of around players like Balotelli. The idea that he's being stitched up by someone somewhere in terms of what comes out. But what you got to see on the pitch was someone who just looked a million miles away, but then was capable of something terrific, but never in anywhere meaningful. It wasn't like he was banging in eight. He didn't bang in eight from 30 yards and the rest of the time he was wasting our time. It was very much that a lot of his best work was done in the centre circle, and then a lot of him failing to run around everywhere else.
Do you think he was never quite the right fit for Liverpool, or is it just that that it was the wrong time, the wrong squad, he was in the wrong position? What is it that never quite clicked?
I think he basically needs to be by a mile the best player at a club. Like, not even by a bit. Like, perhaps the most. He's the footballer who perhaps needs to be the most, or certainly say since 1993's Matt Letizia. Like, that's literally I think where he's done quite well in France, because I think he's gone to a lot of smaller sides where he basically plays number nine, gets to do what he wants, and then and comes alive a bit more in games. I don't think it suits him not being. I think he needs to not just, as I say, not even just be the best player, but be the best player by a significant distance. And I think that's a real problem when you come to a club like Liverpool, where you need to basically have 11 best players, or at the very least four best players, and then Balotelli's best playerness. You know, he is not Messi, he's not Ronaldo, so he's not in a situation where his best playerness can dominate everybody else's and he can still play for an elite club. He's not good enough for that. The best thing he could have been was basically Daniel Sturridge's foil, which he might have accepted, but Sturridge got injured.
Dan, is his career at Liverpool something that you look at with a degree of sadness, or kind of what it could have been? Or do you think it was kind of, it was always going to work out the way that it did? Maybe it wasn't even a wasted opportunity. It was just never going to be the right opportunity.
Yeah, probably the latter. I think a lot of footballers are defined firstly in by which the club they move to, and secondly, the time and the manner in which they move clubs. And I think he comes into a Liverpool dressing room and into a club that is very much entering a state of disarray. And then he, in part, partly through his own doing, becomes an embodiment of that. And I think the thing about Balotelli is he's someone who reacts to the environment he's in. He very much reacts accordingly. You can argue we all do. But I think one case you can make for him is that he's never really been in an environment that you would imagine is positive and is overtly disciplined. You can call Mancini City maybe, but you never really get the impression around that time that it's a Man City setup that is fighting tooth and nail for each other. It's just an amalgamation of players who've come together to win the Football League. So you wonder whether he ever got in that environment, whether he would be, because I'm fine with Mercurial. You know, we can argue Divock Origi's Mercurial in his own way. You wonder whether he could have adapted and applied himself better in a different scenario, in a different setup. As it was, he came into a club that was losing discipline. And what we know about Balotelli is that when he's in those situations, his own discipline can sometimes be questioned and his focus. So I think that's the best way I can answer it.
Siobhan, are there any other Liverpool signings that you'd kind of put Balotelli's Liverpool career on the same plane as? Kind of not even necessarily, I sometimes think with Shaqiri that we may look back and think it was a good fit, but at the wrong time. And it's not that there's anything wrong about Shaqiri. It's just that for whatever reason, things didn't fall into place at that given time. It's not that he couldn't have been a Liverpool player that was starting games regularly. I think with Balotelli, it's something different, that it's not just the wrong time or a kind of a missed opportunity. It's just that it was never going to quite fit. And I don't know if there are any others that you'd put in the same category.
I don't know about that, to be honest. The comparison to Shaqiri, it's the same kind of air of will he, won't he? Yeah. Ahead of every game, but I'm not necessarily comparing it because I don't think, obviously, to touch on what Dan said before, Balotelli came to the club with so much kind of baggage, if you want to call it that, and he kind of had like a childlike quality to him, I thought, where he just seemed a little bit like no one had given him the nudge that he needed. You always hear about these managers who think they can change players, and I think he was probably one of those that needed someone. I don't even know whether those managers exist or whether those players exist that only work under certain managers, but he always struck me as one of those. And then ahead of every game, you thought maybe like, is this when he shows up? Is this when he shows up? And he just didn't, obviously. But yeah, the thing about him was that he never seemed to help himself, as well as like obviously not being in the right environment, to be in the wrong time, being reactive to what he was. His immaturity meant he didn't help himself. He was never that far away from something controversial. So who you'd like him liken him to, I don't know, but I think that there's it's no kind of coincidence the way he's bounced around with similar kinds of reputations around the place. So although I often feel a bit, you know, I always me as well, so you know, I'm not knocking him, so I don't know. It's hard to tell, because like I don't think people helped. He didn't help himself, but people didn't help him. He was the butt of a few jokes from Rodgers, wasn't he? And then it touches on what Neil said before, where, like, you know, you take with a pinch of salt what you hear coming out, because you only hear what people want you to hear. But when, you know, didn't he respond one time when someone said to him, like, what does he bring to the club? And he said trouble, like, in an interview. Like, it's not a great start. It's not a great kind of marker to start something, but then he didn't help himself either, so... I don't know, and I like Shaqiri too much to make that comparison. I like the madness.
If Shaqiri were to leave the club at any point, I would think that's a shame. That was a real missed opportunity.
Oh, yeah, that's not how I feel about Balotelli, definitely.
Because Balotelli was the opposite, in the sense that it's like, that was never going to work for. It was never going to be the right fit.
It never felt right.
But maybe the moment isn't right. I don't know. There are other factors at play, obviously. But
I think it was Dan said before about, or Neil, sorry, said about coming in and being the best. I think Shaqiri is coming to a really different place, hasn't he? Where there is loads of people who are the best and he doesn't need to be the best.
Yeah.
Whereas Balotelli probably came in with a tag of being like, oh, maybe this is where he'll click, and it didn't happen. So, no real strong feelings of him. I think he's probably going to be like Peter Pan, kind of suspended in childhood for his entire life. But what do I know?
Mike, what are your memories like of watching him play?
Do you know, the first thing that struck me is you sort of don't want to judge a player before he comes in, but you know, when you're getting Balotelli, you're getting everything that's gone on before, as well as maybe a player that I don't know. He's 6'3", Balotelli, and he's strong, and he wasn't slow. So you think he's got all the tools there. This could work. And at the first game he starts against Tottenham, he misses a good 3 or 4 chances. Really, probably should have at least 2 goals on the day. Mm. And you're sort of thinking, oh, maybe this would work. And then Neil points out, like, it's gonna him and Sturridge, we're gonna sort of really bounce off each other, and you know, somewhere in alternative reality that might have happened, and they both might have got 15, 20 goals that season. But it never quite worked out that way. An interesting thing in Gerrard's book, he says Rodgers sort of comes over to him a couple of days before the end of the transfer window. You know, it was well documented. We went for a lot of different sort of strikers that season. We had Loric Remy basically done by the medical. That was failed. And then we sort of jumped from Loic Remy to Balotelli. I think we've been after Sanchez that summer, haven't we, as well? Is that the 14-15 season Balotelli comes in for us, isn't it?
Being after Sanchez,
We've gone from Sanchez to Remy to Balotelli. And I think Rodgers didn't want to go into the season without having at least a chance of something might be able to work. Balotelli was the last thing. You know, because we signed deadline day or the day before. It sort of makes sense to have a gamble. And, you know, it didn't pay off. It's probably one of them gambles where it's like, as much as you can have in gambling, it'd be 50-50, 70-30, whatever. It was probably odds against, really, that it was going to work. But it probably felt like at the time, for the 6 months, 12-month period, that we were going to get Balotelli. You know, if he'd have come in and gave us 15 goals, everyone would have been saying, that's brilliant, that. And it sort of never happened. And it's probably not a bad reflection upon him as a player, because he's not really gone and done it anywhere, really. He's been good in patches all round. He came through at Inter and was good. But he was a young lad then. He goes to City and, you know, he's not putting goals in left, right and centre, but he's you know, he's figuring for them. Doesn't get his first ever assist comes when he sets Aguero for the title winning goal. So he could have been so much more, I think, Balotelli. And I think that was, as Dan mentioned before, about application and stuff. You know, maybe if he had some sort of different approach to his career, it might have gone somewhere else. But I'm sure if you sit down and ask him honestly, he'll probably say, yeah, he wishes he could have done more, but he was still happy with his lot.
Neil, can you think of any players that you'd compare to him in terms of as Liverpool signings and how they've worked out? Or is he just kind of stands alone?
I think he does just sort of stand alone, to be honest. Like, I really struggle to sort of the last minute nature of it, because the thing about, like, for instance, he was on the same thing on the wild cards as Diouf. The thing about Diouf was who they really wanted Diouf, whereas one of the things that Balotelli sort of comes in as is someone that no one really wanted. And it was all very much phrased as, you know, about how important the chance was for him and all of that sort of stuff. So I think it's quite difficult. I think that, you know, and I think that part of what doesn't work for him is that no one at the club's really prepared to properly go to bat for him. But then the flip side of that is this is back to the idea that he sort of just needs to be the best player somewhere. Like, everyone else in the dressing room's got to look at it and say, you know, if we've got to get the best out of Mario today. Whereas that was a Liverpool dressing room with Sterling and Coutinho in. Sterling's, you know, if he went now, I think it'd be a £100 million player, and Coutinho did go, whether you think it's too much for £142 million. So they're looking at it thinking, well, why should I do your running?
Fair. Right, shall we do some general football? The answer is yes. So your options are Northeast football, which are 25%. International.
Devastated.
On 15%. I'm sorry, democracy doesn't work. We've seen it time and again. But the winner on a blazing 59.5% was EFL Closed Doors. So this is the news that Rick Parry, EFL chair, has written in an open letter to fans saying that it's going to have to return behind closed doors in order to survive, basically. Am I right in saying there's been a date set for that as well?
A return to training date, I think, is set for the 16th of May.
Right. So, I mean, we should be so lucky. But, I mean, Dan, if someone said to me right now, Liverpool could be returning to training within a month and you'd get to watch Liverpool win the league behind closed doors, whatever anyone may have said 2 months ago about that not being how we wanted it to be, I'd bite your hand off to take that. Do you think it means anything for us? And if so, is it promising?
I think it has to, really. I think the Premier League has to be shown to lead the way. I mean, unfortunately, it's going to look like it's a parallel with government, really, that the NHS are leading the way, as apart from the people who are meant to be governing us. And it's going to look the same, that the EFL and Rick Parry might be leading the way, when in fact the Premier League should be representing English football. So whoever's taking the lead from who, you would imagine that the EFL, I can't ever envisage a situation where the EFL gets to complete the season but the Premier League doesn't, for example. Yeah. So, you know, we're recording this at the time that the Premier League meeting on the Friday, the 17th, hasn't been concluded yet. Whether we start to get the same noises from this meeting, one can only imagine. But if plans are in place to get league clubs back to training mid-May, then you would imagine that there is a contingency there for things like health and safety and ways in which they can protect the people involved with that. They could do a lot worse than ringing Germany and asking what they're doing in terms of not only...
Ring Germany.
Ring Germany. Is that Germany?
Oh, sorry, France. Wrong number.
Give Germany a bell and ask them what they're doing with Bundesliga and stuff like that. But yeah, I think it's got to mean something for the Premier League. And like you say, it has to be the priority that if we can get football back safely, yeah, absolutely, we must do. You know, the prospect of not finishing this season isn't just Liverpool not winning a Football League title. It's the prospect of football, for no football for 6 months and possibly beyond. That's devastating to the game on a broad and wider sense. That's absolutely devastating to everybody. Don't care who you support. If you support Everton, that is absolutely devastating to you and your club's finances, by the way. So, you know, it's in everyone's interest here. And I think someone somewhere needs to start putting a bit of a foot down and saying, no, we are 100% certain, or as certain as we can be, that this is the right thing to do and the safe thing to do. So you are therefore doing it. And I think a bit of that needs to go on. Because the minute you start talking about compromise at a scale, people are going to just latch onto it. It's like the contracts thing. It's like, you can't do this because of that. Well, there's always going to be a that. There's always going to be a but in this argument. Now, you're just going to have to decide which takes precedence in the whole argument.
Siobhan, it's almost difficult to know who to look to kind of go, well, that's promising, or that doesn't bode well for us, because you can look at that EFL statement and think, or the open letter rather, and think, brilliant, that could mean maybe that we could be coming back behind closed doors before the year's out. Or you can look at Germany and think, well, that's promising, that could be us. But then at the same time, you can look to Scotland and go, right, that's not quite as promising for us. And that's different. So do you take any hope from looking at what other leagues, what other governing bodies are doing? Or do you just think it's kind of, it's like trying to, it's trying to predict something that you've got no concept of, really?
No concept of, and no idea what's really for the best. And the reason I take no confidence in it at this stage is related to what Dan said before, is that it's the fact that the Premier League aren't the first people to be saying something. It's the fact that it's not coming from them, and then something else happening, then something else happening. The fact that everyone else seems to kind of have their ducks in a row, and who knows, by the time this goes out, it might be clearer. I think that everything that's come out of the Premier League so far has been fairly ambiguous in terms of like, oh, we're not going to do this, or we're going to leave it till that, and we're going to wait till it's done safely. That's all great, but it's only the last week or so that other people have kind of come out with something more solid. It's a tough one, really, because there's massive repercussions whichever way happens. I'm not that, you know, kind of into the ins and outs of it, but, you know, you're never going to please everybody. But the concept of the only, you know, it being in... The season being continued at some point, or not being continued at some point, rescuing next season is a nonsense, because the concept that they even thought that it's going to just go back to normal and September can just be September is ridiculous. So I haven't got a clue, Amelia. Much like most things in life at the moment, I haven't got a clue in that. I don't feel confident in it, to answer your question, because I think that there's probably a more awe-inspiring order for these things to come out in and for them to happen, and that's not what happened. And I won't believe in it until it's written down and in front of you, and even then I probably doubt it a little bit.
Neil, I think the thing with, we can look at other governing bodies that are making other decisions kind of domestically, forgetting Germany or other countries and what they're doing. The thing with the Premier League is there's more money invested in this season, finishing, not finishing, how it all goes about, than in any other governing body, any other sport in the country. And that's obviously a huge deciding factor in what's being talked about.
There's also, in the Premier League, I think there's greater disparity than there is anywhere else. I think there's the EFL is really interesting because it's got to worry about the Championship, League One and League Two, and the cliff between the Premier League and the Championship, and Championship and League One, I would argue, equally sized in terms of scale. So I think the average wage goes up by a factor of about five between the two, which contextualises sort of the fact that the EFL does have that challenge. But the flip side is that the EFL obviously has greater weight towards League One and League Two in terms of weight of numbers, but different with amounts of money. I'm not saying it's easier to run the EFL here or make decisions around the EFL, because I don't necessarily think that it is, but I think that puts a little bit of context into the wider discussion. I think with the Premier League, one of the problems is vested interests. But I think ultimately one of the problems with the Premier League as well, though, is the idea that a lot of the, like, there had to be something that was leaked about this meeting before it took place, because there just had to be. Someone had to say this is what's on the agenda for the, one of the things that may be on the agenda for the meeting. And it might be that they get to that point in the agenda of the meeting and they go, yeah, well, we can make that work. Let's not worry about that right now. And I think that this is part of the problem, is that what the EFL does have as a strength is that it's easier to be going about your business with a relative amount of quiet. So the first thing you hear today is the EFL statement about resuming, about the fact that it may resume behind closed doors. So that puts them in a better position. What you don't have is the build up to an EFL statement that goes on for 36 hours, and then the aftermath, because the next thing that'll happen is whatever's decided in the Premier League meeting today, because all of these people cannot hold their own piss on Sunday in three or four, it'll be one of the tabloids, one of the broadsheets, and in The Athletic, there will be a leaked version of events as to what's come out and what that's going to mean next. Because firstly, there's demand for that, but secondly, because these people haven't got sufficient respect for one another to be able to keep sensible conversations behind closed doors, and because there's so many axes to grind and so much is in play, then that's what's going to happen. So each of these meetings that take place on a Friday effectively takes place for 48 hours before it happens, 48 hours after it happens, and actually the main thing that's happening with the meeting is that it's almost a little bit of a keep in touch and see where we are. So I think the EFL, actually, to me, the EFL closed doors thing, where it's interesting is I suspect it ends up being the pathway that's likely to be followed over a period of time by the Premier League. It's just they've got to make it more of a soap opera than the EFL, who can just basically come to rational decisions one after the other.
Mike, do you think part of the problem, though, is that we're all so desperate for answers when there aren't any yet, that we can kind of all go, well, I'd like to have a date from which training will resume, and I'd like to know a date when it's going to come back behind closed doors, when the answer is we don't even know when a lockdown's going to end, we don't know when bars and restaurants are going to reopen, so how can anyone really give you an answer for something like that?
It's all like everyone's been saying, unprecedented times, you know, because it is, like, it's never happened before ever. So, you know, the main thing to be is just sensible, which EFL are doing. Like, obviously it's going to be behind closed doors, so just announce it's going to be behind closed doors. Don't say if, but, or maybe. You know, say we may get back to training at a certain date, that's sensible. But say, look, it's going to be behind closed doors, because we all know that's the way it's going to be. So get out and get in front of it all. And what Neil's saying about the sort of spectacle of the Premier League making it what it is absolutely right. And the fact that we're literally doing nothing at the moment apart from just, like, existing. A lot of the country, we think, like, we'll want these questions answered, and these questions can't be answered, as we keep seeing in the government's daily briefing. It's the same questions with stupid answers. Like, no one knows when the lockdown is going to end. You said it yourself. You can't second guess. You've just got to say, right, we'll do everything as sensibly going forward as we can. And the most sensible thing to do is keep people in business, basically. Mm. And that's for every football club, which means that the season needs to be concluded. Mm. And it doesn't matter if it's concluded in June, July or December. Mm. It literally doesn't matter, because you can't start next season until the season's finished. So that's the biggest logistical thing that is in front of everyone at the moment. It's got to be finished, and it's got to be finished as safe as possible when possible.
It's right. Right. Shall we do random? Shall we perk ourselves back up with random? So your choices are, come on, show me those smiles. Your options are jogging on 33%.
Nope.
Nope. PDC home tour on 27%, so even more nope. Cleaner on 39.1% was who makes the tea? ? Now, I don't know if this is a
what
reference
was the context?
To... Well, is it a cup of tea? Is it your tea that you're eating, or is it gossip in the Drag Race sense? So, those are your choices. Interpret it as you want. Who makes the tea, Siobhan?
Okay, I make dinner.
Good.
Tea. Yeah. I very rarely make cups of tea. The kettle is not my zone. I blame the fact that my fellow's working in where I'm sitting now. We've had to swap places for me to do this, and he's in the other room, and he can see the kettle, and you know, like, he's got a visual prompt to make a cup of tea. I just kind of forget. So, and I'm in the other room, and I'm like, oh, we might be on a call, I won't go in just in case he's, you know, but moment, I just don't want to make a cup of tea. And also one of the small bugbears of having a baby is that you never finish a cup of tea, so there's no point making one. So that's my life at the moment, is finding old cups of tea and then thinking, oh, I better drink that because I don't want him to think that I'm not drinking cups of tea, because then he won't make me more cups of tea. So I drink cold tea a lot.
Life's fun.
And then it's a way to live. And then in terms of gossip, my mum says to me every single day, any news? Oh, saying that, where are you going to get news from? And every day I think, don't say it tomorrow. And then every day she says it the next day.
My mum
no one brings gossip.
No, there is no gossip. My mum, every single time I speak to her, goes, that's all there is to report. And it's a bit like the
say
first
hello.
Week. That's all there is. Have you had your tea? Yes. You know, I saw a tweet the other day about, you know, the first week of freshers, when the kind of the chat would be like, so what A-levels did you do? But all that everyone's saying is like, oh, so how's lockdown going? And the answer is, it's shit. Everyone's having a shit time. No one's got anything else to add. Like, it's just, there's no gossip in that sense.
Madness, innit? That's the stock answer.
Madness,
isn't it? There's a couple of stock phrases going around. Hey, it's a good job the weather's nice. That's a good one. Everyone's been saying that. And a lot more runners out than usual.
Mike, who makes the tea and the tea and the tea?
I don't really drink that much tea, to be honest. Maybe like a cup or two every now and again. I generally like my tea made by Craig Hannon when I come into the office, because he makes a good cup of tea.
R.I.P.
for now. So I can make a good brew. Like, I drink water mainly when I'm at home.
That's not a brew.
No, it's definitely not a brew.
Missing some key elements.
No, sure. The boiling of the tea, the water, and adding the tea. But I don't really, I'll use one of the stock phrases that Siobhan's just brought up. The weather's been nice, hasn't it? So I always found it baffling that people drink full-on brews when it's like 23 degrees. And my mum and my nan used to say, it cools you down. I was like, oh, fuck, I don't believe a word of that. And back to the non-tea drinking thing, my nan used to make a brew and drink like 75% of it and then just leave it. I'd go, you going to finish that? She'd go, no, I'm making another one in a minute. It's wild. As for the tea, the scran, I live with my mum, so I look after myself in terms of my breakfast and my dinner, because I don't want to be too much of a burden. But she likes to make the tea. I can make a mean fajita, which might surprise people. I've had to become quite adept at wrapping them these days, because you don't want these like salsa and guacamole bombers down your t-shirt. So I've got it down to a fine art. I can make a good fajita, and that's about me.
Ladies. Mike, if your top is clean after you've had fajitas, you haven't had fajitas.
No, you've got to wrap it properly. You know, there's none of this messing about. You've got to wrap it so you can get it all sorted, and it doesn't like the fajitas doesn't ruin the integrity of the wrap.
Oh, I know my way around a fajita. Believe me.
Dan, you're a man who lives alone.
Cheer everyone up,
who makes the tea?
The answer would be me. I make tea, the tea, and tea gossip. Yeah. So yeah.
What's the tea gossip?
Yeah, I just gossip to myself, make things up about other people, make myself believe they don't like me, stuff like that. I've actually got into this mad routine where, like, I'll be internalising, and if I'm walking through the flat, like, I'll say something funny to myself, and I'll just go out loud. Like, and I've only spoken about 2 hours, but then I'll just put out this random laugh, and then I'm like, that was weird, wasn't it?
I was expecting you to say, should we have a cup of tea, Dan? Yeah, go on, we'll have a brew.
Living alone, do you sometimes do this thing that I used to do where if you haven't made noise in a really long time, you'll just be sat in a room and go, just to check that your mouth
is honestly, yeah, loads of that. Or I step into a room, forget that I've forgotten something from the other room, or forget why I've gone in there and just call myself a fucking tit and walk back out. I do loads of that. My life the last 3 weeks has just been me stepping into rooms, standing there for 2 minutes, shaking my head, calling myself a bellend, and walking into another room and doing it again. So yeah, it's good.
Passing the time, isn't it, Dan?
Neil's thinking of a video opportunity here for the Anfield Draft. Set up a camera in one of the rooms. Neil, who's making the tea?
Brockle's making more teas than I am. She's very good at it. I do get criticised. It's the pressure of tea. Tea is a live discussion in ours. Brockle likes a serious one, whereas I'm just quite happy at times, you know, to have something in chips, or maybe not even that, maybe just a bowl of yogurt and some fruit. But she likes tea to be a thing, which therefore means tea needs to be planned around what we purchase in the first place. And so, you know, I don't cope very well with someone asking me on Thursday what I fancied for my tea next Wednesday night.
Oh no, that's mad, isn't it, that?
Yeah. I find that difficult, but then, you know, I get the benefit of her planning, so I shouldn't be too judgmental. I work up in her room, the Flamingo room at the minute, and she's in the kitchen. And thus far, across a 4-week lockdown, I've been made 0 cups of tea through this process. And every now and again, I may well mention the fact that, you know, parched here. But there is the
how does that go down?
Not very well. There's no change in her approach, to say the least. And then she criticizes my tea making because I don't let it brew for long enough, which literally does mean at times 10 minutes. 10 minutes is what she means. When I've got stuff to do, I've got to come back up here and crack back on in between shows, etc., etc. So, and in terms of gossip, again, that's most definitely not me. I was accused of keeping secrets earlier today, which it just means not telling things because I'm a very discreet man. It's across the board, to be honest with you. Yeah, it's. I mean, all these issues are contentious in ours. Contentious. I'm not looking forward to this going out now.
The thing about TV and events is that in these unprecedented times, it's all that there is.
It's always been an event, Siobhan. Nothing's changed.
No, oh God, no, nothing's changed in my life either. Like I planned it from midday. But in this in the conditions we're in right now, everywhere you look, you're thinking, oh God, I eat my tea there, I cook my tea there, I take my tea in today once I finish with it. It's tea is everywhere. So, you know, don't knock anyone for making an event of it. I'm all in for a serious tea. I am also in for spaghetti on toast as well, but you know, you've got to have something to look forward to. I got the Nisha Katona cookbook out last night and made a bloody curry from scratch.
It's class act.
I've never done that in my life. Yeah. Gorgeous.
I said on AFQ yesterday, I've been like got right into Chinese cooking, so like I've got a bang into it. It's like a weekend thing now. Like, I kind of look forward to
it. The only thing is that you realise that these recipes need ingredients, and the ingredients can't be bought from the Londres at the end of the road. some of them can, but, like, I had to find fenugreek. Is that how it's pronounced? No? Yeah, so I had to get that off of Click and Collect. But I often use making a big tea as an excuse to leave the other room just for a little while, and, you know, put someone else in charge of that room. So I'm all for it.
How's it going in yours, Amelia?
I'm making some incredible teas. It's been like a spectacle every single night. And I'm
chickpea fix.
I was gonna say, what's the chickpea up to?
Got about 7 cans in the in the
stockpile on there.
Yeah,
there are 4 emergency cans in my house as well.
Yeah, if you add those, and I've got 11. No, I saw them in the supermarket the other day and did a double take, and then was like, because no one else was taking them, and kind of was like, have you seen these, to other people? They didn't speak back.
Where's your taste game at?
I'm about 80% now, I'd say.
Nearly there.
I'm operating at 80% taste.
No, so more just then broccoli dinners then. You're eating proper foods again.
Just a head of broccoli.
Don't knock them.
Oh no, we will, Dan, we will.
Well, there you have it. Tea is all there is. Our lives are empty. That's been Wildcards. I'm Amelia Bonnet. You've had Neil Atkinson, Siobhan Began, Dan Morgan and Mike Keeney. Nice one.